try not to trip you when you get out of that chair.
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
That's all right. It's a good turnout, I think. Well, we're happy with the turnout. Yeah.
Are you guys ready?
I think so, yeah. How was your lunch?
What
did you have? Oh, Tatation One? Nice. Nice.
Nice guy.
He's a nice guy. He's really supportive and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. Nick came. Here, yeah. Yeah, or you can sit here. Oh, I guess it really thinks that it's over. There we go. Is the music still on? Is the music still playing? I guess we'll start at like I guess we'll start at like 5 after.
Carl's gonna start in just a minute.
Oh, really? Okay. I guess we shouldn't leave it too late.
Yeah.
I didn't think the room was going to fill up this much.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised. There's still people wandering in. I think if nobody comes in the next minute or so, we can probably start.
So look, here's the castle.
Oh, yeah.
One more minute?
Yeah, that's good. Oh, Val's here.
Yeah, cool.
Yay.
Great.
Hi. These are all the web development people.
Andrea.
Hey. Oh, hi.
Hi,
yeah, Val, sit at the front. We did, yeah. Both rows, actually. Yeah.
Nice jacket.
Val's got style. I guess. Can probably start, though. It is a good turnout, eh? Do you remember how many people we used to get for the lunch and learns? That's what I thought. Yeah, we got 150 people RSVP. I think the timing's good, though. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not.
So good afternoon, everyone.
Thanks.
We're just holding off a few minutes so that everybody can arrive. Wow, what a crowd. Thank you for coming today. This is the first time in a number of years that the web group has had an opportunity to meet with the community of site managers and talk a little bit about what's been going on and some new things that are coming up. So we're really excited today. I used to look out into these crowds and be able to recognize practically every face, but it seems that these days we have so many new site managers that it's impossible to expect to remember everybody. By the way, I'm Carl Yaroshevich, the web group, and I just wanted to give you a couple statistics that will bring you up to speed. Since September 2014, we've had a 30% increase in the number of site managers across campus. That brings us up to about 3,000 trained site managers and editors, of which at least 2,000 are active on a regular basis. We've also experienced a 32% growth in the number of websites since the end of 2014. So you can see there are an awful lot of people using the system, pushing it, testing it out, etc. But as a web group, what have we been doing? So many of you know that we went through a very long and massive upgrade project, and we're happy to report that in 2015 that was completed. We've also had an opportunity to improve many of the back-end tools and many of the site management tools. Did I just cut out? Okay, we'll watch out for that. We've also managed to be able to iron out a lot of the kinks in the system software, and this is really helping us to improve the stability of the system overall. And on top of this, we've been able to introduce some really cool testing tools, which means that before we release features, we're able to test them rigorously and reduce the potential that something might go wrong. And what this means is that we've actually experienced year over year, since the end of 2014 up through to the end of 2015, a 49% reduction in the number of issues and bugs that are reported to us. So 49%. It's a significant amount. It means that we can get on to other things, not just fixing bugs, but actually developing new tools and new features. And it doesn't mean that you'll never see another bug. I can't promise you that. And there'll be more reports of incidents. But I think we're well on the way to reducing them. So we have a lot of really great site managers, yourselves included. And they build really great pages. We're very happy with what people are being able to do with the tools that are available. But we know, we recognize, and we recognize from conversations we're having with site managers that sometimes building web pages can still be a struggle. I mean, different people have different approaches. They have different solutions. They have different ways of laying out a web page. What's happening, though, is that they're introducing some inconsistencies, and they're also making it more difficult for people who have disabilities to be able to read their pages. On top of this, some of these pages aren't showing up well in mobile. So these are things that we're really eager to address. We know it's challenging. We know that sometimes you struggle to differentiate different types of content on your site. So, for instance, if you're doing a marketing outreach, how do you differentiate that information from plain information pages? Or if you're trying to create a really cool landing page, how do you make that different from some of your longer inside pages? So what we did over the past 6 months, we met systematically with groups of site managers, and we started to ask a few simple questions. So, for instance, how can the site building experience be better? What are the primary challenges that you face as a site manager or as an editor? And how can we just make the whole experience be easier? So we know from conversations that we can do better, and we know that you really want to do better, so that's why we're here today. We're going to show you the results of some of these conversations. And we're really excited about them, and we hope that by the time you leave here today, you will be as well. So we have a lot to cover. I'm going to hand over the microphone to my colleagues, Jason Del Mar and Joyce Peralta.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming. I am a senior developer analyst. I work with the web team since 2006, and I have a design and technology background. So I'm very excited about the tools that we are showing today, because I really think this is where design and technology and content intersect. So we're going to talk about a few different pages. We're going to talk about home pages, landing pages, and basic pages, and go through some new tools. And the first page that we want to talk about is your home page. The home page is arguably the most important page on your site. these may sound obvious, but it's the first place where your brand identity and showing your visitors who you are, this happens the first time on your homepage. It also commonly gets the most amount of traffic on your site. And it helps direct your visitors to the most important sections of your web page. So this is another university's research homepage. We're not going to say who it is. We took a lot of effort blurring out the name. No guesses. Take a look. Did we not do a good job?
Yeah, a little bit.
So take a look at this page. How does it feel? If we ask ourselves those same questions, is it showcasing the brand identity of the university or of this department? Maybe. It's using the blue. It has a nice, big, prominent photo. Is it helping directing the visitors to the most important sections of the site? This one I have a little bit more trouble with. There's a lot going on this page. There's a lot of list items, a lot of links, a lot of headers. Everything kind of looks the same. This page is trying to do everything, and in fact, it's doing nothing well. So we've created a tool that allows you to promote your brand identity and also help direct your visitors to the most important sections. And a lot of site managers have asked for this and have been doing this on their own accord. And we call it the statement block. So the statement block is a large background image with a text overlay. And this is a great image. McGill has great photography, this beautiful campus, and this image says a lot about the university, the demographics that professors are thinking outside of the box. It's an urban setting. There's nature. Students seem well hydrated. I think everyone's drinking Perrier. But this image is saying a lot. And how many people have or use Photoshop? Oh, okay. Yeah, I love Photoshop. Photoshop is great. And you can do this in Photoshop. But here are the problems with Photoshop. I mean, one, you have to have it and you have to know how to use it. There's a good number of people here that already have that. If you're working with another site manager, to build something like this, you would have to coordinate, the fonts and your layout style, make sure that those fonts are on each of your computers. And also, if this is an image, that text is not accessible. Search engines, McGill Search will not be able to pick it up. Google Search will not be able to pull up that information that you've put into the image. And also, screen readers won't be able to read that content for visually impaired visitors. The other thing is, if you spend the effort to do this image in Photoshop and it looks perfect on desktop, you're showing it to your friends, it looks great, but then the font that you thought was 14 or 15 pixels, now when someone sees it on mobile, it's 3 pixels. It's tiny. It's really illegible. So we really wanted to create a solution that has accessible content. So now you're able to create a background image and have real HTML text on top with an actionable click button. And this stuff is really flexible. So here's another layout for the statement block. So here are 4 statement blocks on possibly your homepage, which could help direct your visitors to the most important sections. So here on the top one, you have our stories directing your visitors to blogs, applications, programs, and research. And again, using these images that we have, you can relate to the people in the photos, and it really reinforces the content in these key messages. And they're relatable. You know, you can relate with these folks. I relate with a gentleman on the top. He wears glasses, I wear glasses. Here's another layout. So this is the statement block. If you look right beside the sidebar, that's a statement block with a half width. So this isn't really magic per se, but keep your eye on the four blocks below. So when the vertical navigation comes into play, the statement block automatically scales. You don't have to re-upload or change the size of your photo. It will automatically take care of it. And also the content within will also scale. Keep your eye on it one more time. When the sidebar gets removed, then the half-width statement blocks get bigger. We really think this is going to be a powerful item, and this is one of three tools that we're going to show today. And Joyce is going to take you through the other ones.
Thanks, Jason. It's nice to see everybody here today. Thanks, everyone, for coming out. So Jason's already shown you one of the tools, and I'm going to take you through the rest. My name is Joyce Peralta, and I'm a relatively recent addition to the IT web team. Prior to working in IT, I worked in web communications on the communication services team. And in that capacity, I had the opportunity to work with a lot of you. So I'm really glad to have the chance to continue to work with you. One of the things that we worked on together when I worked in webcoms was how to write engaging web-friendly content for your websites. And that involves making your content short and scannable and well-formatted. And I know from working with a lot of you on your projects that you're really good at writing web-friendly content for your sites. But one of the things that I really struggled with as a site manager was how to take that content and put it into a WMS website in a way in which it was attractive and engaging. And it could be done, but it often took a lot of time and also expertise that was difficult to manage on an ongoing basis and also not accessible. Sometimes when I would create engaging content, attractive content, it involved using techniques that someone using a screen reader, for example, wouldn't be able to access. So since I came to IT, we've got these three new tools, and I'm really excited about them because I think it's really that missing piece that we were missing before in terms of taking our content and making it look attractive. So the first block I'm going to take you through is the call to action block. Call to action content is something we all have on our websites. It's how we tell our students and our faculty members and our staff how to sign up for a conference, how to apply, where to submit feedback, a number of different kind of call to action statements that we make on our websites. Because there was no consistency before, no standard format for creating call to action content, we were kind of left to our own devices to create how this call to action content should look on our sites. And some of us have come up with some really great engaging solutions, I think. You can see a number of different options here online. Maybe some of you recognize some of the call to action statements on your own sites. The difficulty with having different call to action content on everybody's sites is we make it more challenging for our site visitors to identify where do I take the next step on the site. So when they come to that page, they have to kind of interpret, oh, this is the call to action. So that's a problem with creating the different formats. Another difficulty is I know the call to action statements that I would present as buttons were sometimes graphic elements that didn't have any accessible content. So if somebody was using a screen reader to view the site, they would get no information in terms of what that button could do. So these are our new call to action statement blocks. And the new blocks give you the opportunity to add in a number of different elements. You can add in an image or not add in an image. You can add in a title. You can add in some descriptive text, and then your call to action statement is formatted as a consistent red button. And all of these elements, you have the option to add them or not add them to the site, except for the button that is what makes it the call to action statement. So that should be there. But you can not have the image, not include a title, not include descriptive text, whatever works for you in terms of your content requirements. And you can also choose what width you would like these blocks to display at. So at the top there on the left, you see a full width call to action block. Underneath it, there's two half width blocks. On the right there, there's three third-width blocks, and then another full-width block at the bottom. That one doesn't have an image associated with it. The second block I'm going to take you through is the list block. Now, this is another type of content that pretty much all of us have on our websites. I don't think I've ever seen a university site that doesn't have a ton of list content. Similar to the call to action blocks, because we were all left to our own devices in terms of formatting this content and creating this content, it was sometimes time-consuming to get it to look good. Here is the new list blocks. So like the call to action blocks, you have the opportunity to put in an image, some title text, description text, and links. And in the options that I've seen here, there's three links in each example, but you really have the opportunity to add in an unlimited number of links. So you can add in as many as you like. So one of the things that I really like about the list blocks, you'll notice with the other two blocks that we often use them with regular rectangular images, but I find the list blocks look really nice with different shaped images. So with these blocks, I'll often play around with circular images or using icons. I find it's a really good, icons are a really good way to indicate to your visitor what they're going to find in the list underneath. So we've gone through the three blocks. We've gone through the statement block, the call to action block, and the list block. Now we're going to get to the next part of the presentation, which to me is the really exciting part of these blocks, is what types of layouts can you build with these blocks once you start putting them all together? And I find when, in addition to giving you the opportunity to create really engaging dynamic layouts, the new blocks also serve or solve a lot of issues that I've struggled with as a site manager in the past. So one of the difficulties that I've come across in building sites in the WMS is what do I put on the landing pages of my website? So I've created content that I've divided into a central landing page, and then underneath it, some sub-pages. But I have difficulty deciding what do I put on the landing page, the step that people take in between choosing the category and deciding what section of content they want to look at next. And this is an example of one solution that I see implemented a lot at on the WMS, and that's to just put an image on the landing page. And an image is good. It tells your site visitor you've come to the right place. This is, you know, it indicates that they've chosen the right category. But it doesn't really say a lot to your site visitor in terms of what information is going to come next on the pages underneath. So this is a before version. And this is a reimagined version of the same page. So it takes the content that was hidden in those menu items on the left that weren't apparent to your site visitor, and it gives them a layout that they can quickly scan to identify where the different, they can use the titles to identify where the different areas are that they might click on, and what, where are they going to find the information that they're looking for. So at the top there, you'll see one of the new statement blocks. Underneath it, I've put three list blocks, and underneath that, two call to action blocks. I myself am a fan of putting call to action blocks at the bottom of the page, but I'm sure everybody here would do something different with their sites. And here's another example. The two examples I'm going to show next are currently live on the newsroom site. So if you're interested in following along, it's mcgill.ca/newsroom. And if you want to go back to a referenced layout later on after the presentation, you can check the newsroom site as well. So this is a before version of the For Faculty and Staff webpage. So as a faculty and staff member, when you go to this page looking for media support, this is what you see. The text tells you what it is you're looking for, but it doesn't really give you a good indicator of the types of information you're going to see on this page or what kind of support you're going to get when you click on any of these links. When you create a list of links, it forces your site visitor to read the entire list of links before they can find the information that they're looking for. So here's the reimagined For Faculty and Staff page that's now up on the newsroom site. So as a faculty or staff member, you would come to this page and say, I need help with photographs, or I need help with writing. And you could quickly scan through that page and determine, this is the area of the page I need to look at. So at the top, you'll see a full-width statement block. Underneath that, there's two call-to-action blocks, and underneath that, three list blocks. That's the first example. Now, here is the second example and the last example I'm going to take you through. This is a pretty long list. It's an accordion. So as many of you probably know from using accordions, as soon as you click on one of these items, this page is going to get even longer. So if someone was to come to this page, a journalist was to come to this page and need the information in the last item on that list, they would need to read the entire list to find it. And as we know from our Writing for the Web courses, that it's unlikely that someone's going to take the time to read through that list. So here is the reimagined version of the list again. There's some indicators in terms of titles and images that help people kind of identify where is it on this page that I need to look. At the top there, there's a call to action block. That's new. So we kind of switched it up a little bit because normally we've been putting statement blocks at the top of the examples I've been showing you. Underneath it is a full width statement block. And that one's different in that it has multiple buttons. So you can, if you want to have multiple buttons on your call that on your statement block, that's an option. Underneath that is three list blocks, and underneath that, two call to action blocks. So I hope that you'll appreciate from going through all these examples that there's really a ton of different layouts that you can create based on which blocks you choose to use, the order you want to put them in, and what width you want to display them at. And also, inside the blocks, there is a ton of flexibility in terms of what content you can choose or what content you don't choose to use, depending on what your requirements are. So the other side of these blocks is that they're really easy to use. And to take you through how easy to use they are, I'm going to turn the floor back over to Jason.
Great, thanks. So the how-to. Before, I would love to have a word count on how many times we use the word excited in this presentation, but I'm going to add to it. What excites me about the layouts that Joyce just presented was that it really gives us an opportunity to cut down the amount of pages that we have on McGill.ca, which improves how students are finding things and our search results. It can be really powerful. The how-to is really simple. It's going to be a very quick slide. All the blocks basically work the same. It's a form. It's a form where you add a label to know what that block is called within your block structure. And you add a title. You can upload an image. This is for the statements block specifically, but all the blocks are almost identical. And what I wanted to draw your attention to was the new setting of the view mode. So this allows you to select different layouts very conveniently just with a drop-down. Previously, you had to use a half-width, a half-width and a third width and the full width classes and then add that to your blocks. But with this tool now, you can just switch between the two and see what your different layouts could possibly be. So, for example, if you have four half width blocks, then you can change it and have one full width and then 3/3. And it's very quick to see the different possibilities. The other fields are straightforward. The read more link, which would add the editable text button, and also the body content block, which allows you to add the content that shows up in the overlay. So just as for a recap, so we've walked through the statement blocks with the different layout options, allowing your visitors to find the important sections and to promote your brand with McGill's great photos. The call to action, which is directing your visitors to the important actions that you want them or need them to perform on your site. And then the utility list blocks, which we're all making lists. And this really empowers the home page and landing pages. And we also want to talk about your basic information page.
And further to talking about the basic information pages, we wanted to focus in this this session on the three new tools that we've created, the statement block, the call to action block, and the list block. But there's also a ton of other tools available in the WMS that are new, and some of them that have been around for a little while, and maybe people have forgotten that they're there. So we wanted to kind of go through a few of those tools. We don't have time to go through them all in depth. So what we're going to do is a quick little section called the lightning round.
The lightning round. Okay, so going through the lightning round, the first item is the new Twitter blocks. So Twitter blocks have been updated. The design is a little bit cleaner. It's fresh. There's not a lot of added elements. And now you can add multiple Twitter feeds to your site. Previously, you could only add one. Now you can add multiple Twitter feeds. And it's great because if you have dynamic content that you want to supplement, so if you have a standard page and you want to have dynamic content beside it, the Twitter block is a great option.
And I really think that ability to add multiple Twitter channels is really great because there's a ton of great content that's being produced across campus by different departments that might be of interest to your different audience members. And you can now pull that content dynamically into your site. So, you know, you can choose which page of your site to display different types of dynamic content, which is really cool, I think. Continuing on the social media theme, on the right there is the follow block. A few people have already implemented the follow blocks on their sites. This is an opportunity for you to direct your audience to the different social media channels at McGill, whether it be your own social media channels or McGill's official social media channels. If they'd like to participate in the conversation or share some images, as you can see, all the usual suspects are there. There's Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and we recently, very recently, actually so recently it's not in this image, we recently added Instagram, which is something quite a few people had been asking for. Added it yesterday, yeah. So it's a big thing. If you update your follow blocks, if you have one.
Next is tables. I'm sure everyone's created tables on the WMS, quite possibly. But we want to bring your attention to the different styles of tables that are available to you. The first is the default table style, which has the darker headers and zebra striping. Then there's the plain table style with no zebra striping. It has a lighter header. It feels lighter. I like this one. I wish that this one was the default table style. And then we have the zero table style, which eliminates all borders. There's no backgrounds, and it's just typography. And there's a new feature that we just added that could be used on all tables, and it allows site managers to make their tables sortable. So visitors can sort through that content, whether it be alpha or numeric. You just add a table sort class to your table, and the information will sort.
The next item we have up is the On This Page block. And this is an item that you know, a lot of us use on our websites because sometimes there's no choice but to create a great big long information page. So to assist our site visitors with navigating that page, we put a navigation element at the top that allows them to jump back and forth to the various sections of the page. A lot of people will create this. I myself have created this manually in the past. Once you insert the On This Page block on your site and activate the smart mode, it will create this navigation element for you automagically.
Automagically.
So it scans through the page and looks for your titles, and it takes those titles and spits out this navigation element at the top. And if you update any of your titles, it will automatically update the navigation element at the top, which is great.
Yeah, this is a great feature. Previously, you had to add anchors to all your headers. You don't have to do that anymore. So video, we've updated the video player. Previously, it had a thicker border. It was a little bit heavier. We've updated the player. Now it's very clean. You're only seeing the video. And some of the additional features is now you have full screen. So you can have full screen video. You can also, it's more accessible on mobile as well. On mobile devices, there's a lot more coverage. And now you can resize the video to whatever layouts you have. If it's in columns, you can resize the video. Previously, you weren't able to do that.
And it was suggested to me that I don't reveal it, but before we did this presentation, I actually didn't know this existed. This is a type of span. This is a span class that we have in the WMS that allows you to pull out part of the text on your site and create this highlighted graphic element. And I think this is something that a lot of people recreate on their own. So it's really simple to implement. You would just take the open span class open span tag and put it at the beginning of your text. In the example, it's just before Montreal in the second paragraph. And then you put your close span tag at the end, and it's after Jazz Festival. And it automatically creates this graphic highlighted element that you see embedded in the text. And similar to the On This Page block, when you update your text, it automagically updates the element on the right, which means you don't have to create this in Photoshop. When you want to update it, you don't have to update a Photoshop file. It'll do it automatically. And it's readable text as well. So if someone's using a site reader, they'll be able to understand what's in that content.
Yeah, we see this on magazine sites like all the time with pull quotes. It's really powerful if you're using it, for example, like showcasing stats. We see that often enough where you want to pull out a stat or a quote that someone said. Yeah, it can really add interest to the page. So this isn't a new tool, but we did want to talk about varying like images, using images in content. You know, you can get a lot of interest by varying alignment, having one image on the left, some content, one image on the right, and then also breaking up that content with a larger image. And again, Miguel has great photographs that...
Yeah, if you're interested in finding out more about images, the WebComs team has their Web 101 website that has information on where to get images or how to source images. And they also do from time to time a lunch and learn that's similar to this event and just tells you how to find and source images. Great, check it out.
Yeah. So we've shown a lot of items today for the home pages, your landing pages, and basic information pages. So what does all this mean?
So that's a really good question. There it is. Okay, what does this all mean? So basically, what this means is that you now have some brand new content layout tools that help you to create exciting and engaging pages. And why this is really valuable for your readers is because the pages will become easier to absorb, easier to scan, easier to digest. And you will be able to create them more quickly and easily than pages ever before. So we're really happy about that. What this means is that you can create some really engaging home pages that will allow your readers to choose the content that they want to go to. But you're also going to be able to create landing pages that will allow your readers to choose which section is most pertinent to the thing that they're looking for. People spend a lot of time hunting through websites, and if they don't find what they're looking for, they usually give up. But then once they've chosen what they want, you can have really engaging and visually appealing long, scrollable pages. And these are useful because once people have decided that that's the content they want to interact with, they'll be willing to read it. So these tools really allow you to layer information and make it pertinent for the audience. Here's another example. Okay. What you're going to be able to do is actually reduce the clutter on your website. You'll be able to reduce the number of pages on your website. And as Jason mentioned, that should have some real benefits for our search engines. It's going to make it easier for readers to be able to scan and read. And what are they reading? They're reading the valuable content that you're putting so much effort into creating. And so you really want them to get to the meat of what you're doing. And these tools are automatically able to make your content accessible to a variety of users. So if your users do have visual impairments, they are still going to be able to interact with these new tools, with the content that you put into these tools. And this is irrespective of what device or what computer platform or what browser they might be using, because they all work really well on all of these devices. Now, as Jason said before, and I'm going to use the word one more time, we're really excited about this because we feel that by applying these new tools, simple tools, they're going to really help us transform the McGill landscape, web landscape. And big question, how did it look on mobile? Well, we think it looks pretty good. And I think you're going to find that too. No matter which device people are accessing your web pages with, and more people are accessing your pages with devices like this, they're going to look great. So that's our presentation. I'm going to give you a chance to ask some questions in just a moment, but I do just have a couple of special remarks to make, particularly thank yous. First, I'd like to thank Leigh, who's not with us this afternoon, but she helped arrange this. She's a member of our web team. She put together all the logistics for this event. And I'd like to thank Ken Boisjoli-Moreau from ICS. He was in the room just a moment ago, but he has been our technical support, and I don't think we could have done it without him. Karina Hebert from the Faculty of Management has also been very instrumental in helping us out, and Jason and Joyce, of course, for their presentation. Maybe for the first time, I'd like to thank our developers in public. You often don't get to see them. We do have one of our developers here today, but I wanted to point out that our developers spend a lot of time building these tools. After we gather requirements from our site managers and our users, they build the tools, and they enjoy this work very much, and they hope that you'll enjoy the fruits of their labors. Last but not least, I really want to thank all of you for coming, because I know that everybody is really busy with what they're doing, but you've made time out of your Thursday afternoon to come and attend this session, and we hope it will be of benefit to you. So now if you have any questions, please, the floor is open.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Your last slide there where you were showing what the blocks look like on the mobile devices,
mm-hmm.
Is that what the user will see when they load that page, or are they still going to get that boring McGill University and then your whole list of what's on your left-hand menu and your whole list of what's in your horizontal navigation before you get to those pages?
Okay.
Yes. So this is, we are iteratively creating the McGill experience and improving it. The sidebar menu on mobile does take up a lot of space, and that is something on our roadmap to fix. But this is, you will see that item, but that will, the blocks that you saw previously is how it will be presented on mobile for visitors on many different devices, on like mini iPads or any sort of tablet, phones.
Are these available now?
They are going to be made available in a very short amount of time. We're releasing these in early summer. We've piloted these tools with a number of users and have found a few things that need to be adjusted. One of those things is to make them translatable so that you don't have to create two sets, both English and French. And we want to be able to make that adjustment so that the translation of these items will be ready before you start to use them. It'll make it much, much slicker and much easier. I have two more people before you, Andrea.
Yeah, I have my question right there.
Great.
Okay, that's great. Yes.
That's coming. Right now, if you go to the beta blog, which is the middle item right there, there is information about the new blocks on the beta blog with some limited instructions. When they go live to the community, then we'll post more detailed instructions. So, yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Andrea, you're next.
So the new blocks look really good, but they seem really image and graphic heavy.
Mm-hmm.
We create a lot of content, but we don't have a process in place for creating graphics or images. You mentioned the Web 101.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's the Web-101. Sorry. And actually, there's a representative of the webcoms team right here in the front row. Val is here, so if you want to maybe chat with her after, you can ask her how to get images. When I was creating these layouts, I used a lot of images in them. That's how I like to develop my pages. But you don't have to include images in the layouts. They're designed to look nice graphically even without images. So you don't have to use them if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Is there some kind of resource document that shows what the optimal pixel dimensions are for the resolution?
Great.
And what those color codes are for the red and gray on the homepage?
Oh, interesting.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if the color codes are documented, but to answer your question about the dimensions, so these blocks are definitely an improvement on how NevoSlider handles images. So whatever dimensions you put in, those dimensions will stay. The image that you upload is always going to stay at that same ratio. So that ratio will be respected.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, if your pixels or the image you make is too small, mm-hmm. and it's blown up in the full width, it looks very pixelated.
Right. So it depends on what your use case is. If you're going for a full width image and there is no sidebar, then you'll have to create an image which is that size, and then we'll scale down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, scaling up for sure is going to be pixelated.
When I create these blocks, I always go with the widest image, and then I play around to see what width it's going to look best at. So if you know, it'll save you time if you kind of work for the like largest case scenario, because the blocks will adjust automatically after that. So you really just have to crop one size.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like a great use case for some of the landing page layouts that Joyce presented.
Mm-hmm. The list block elements would be really good. The question was there's an existing page of links on the Graduate Studies site that has a very long list of links. And the question was, would you recommend any way to reformat that page where it would look more, where it would be better? So what we're suggesting is this would definitely be a use case for the list blocks. And you can always look at ways to, if you're open to doing it, adding graphical elements to your lists that will help your users identify subcategories of your content. I know it all probably pertains to graduate students, but I expect probably sections of that list are in some different categories. So, no, it's just okay. well, you could break it down into lists, maybe even, you know, alphabetically.
Say, yeah. You know, A to D, E to whatever. Mm-hmm. Make those your graphic objects, and then file things underneath them.
Sorry, repeat the question.
Are these blocks Visible?
Right. So they work very similarly to the regular blocks that you're used to. The only difference is that you have a template, and then you can just rebuild as many of these blocks as you'd like.
Mm-hmm. But similar to the existing blocks, there's a field where you can identify which pages you want the blocks to appear on. So, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I just had a question, so I think it's already answered, but most of our people who edit our pages are only site editors, so they won't have access to those pages.
What are the permissions like?
Currently, we're still having to finalize when the tool gets launched. Then currently, it's for site managers. It would be at site managers, but I mean, there could be a request for site editors.
I think.
Currently, only site managers can add
more edits. Yeah, at the moment, many of the permissions are geared towards site managers so that they can add more than just the basic content. As we get feedback on certain items from certain areas, like we try to create the permissions to work across many different sites and many different organizations. And what we find is that there probably aren't two that are exactly alike, but where you have a lot of site managers or a lot of site editors, does it make sense to extend the permissions to the site editors as well? We're really open to feedback from that. So if it makes sense that some of these tools be released to editors as well as site managers, let us know. We'll take that into consideration.
Oh, I think Patrick? I think it would depend on how extensive your restructuring process would be. You might want to create a new page that you leave unpublished and add the blocks to that page. And then when you have the page looking or all the blocks attached to the page that you want, then publish it. So, yeah, just so that there's no kind of weird, viewing experience. I don't think I would duplicate it. I've seen that happen before. You probably won't want to make your duplicate with the same page name. I think that's when the difficulty comes in, is when you create multiple pages with the same name, then the system gets confused and it starts adding the -0 and -1. So that's probably not the best practice. We should maybe add that to the KV. That's a possibility, too, though I think Patrick wants to leave his content live while it's being worked on. So, all good ideas. Are the blocks accordion friendly is the question. Do you mean can you put blocks inside of accordions? We don't recommend that as a practice, even with the blocks that exist now. So sometimes I know people put, for example, columns inside of accordion blocks or tabs inside of accordion blocks. The blocks weren't created to work that way, even though they do sometimes. It's problematic. So we often don't recommend that people put content, block content inside of block content. So if you can avoid doing that.
It's a lot of extra clicks for the visitor to find the needed information. Right. Yeah, so the question is, what is the advantage of using the list blocks over just using the width, the columns? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when we've looked at the landscape, I mean, we create a lot of lists. Site managers create a lot of lists. And there are some examples where it's not very consistent of that there might be a bullet at the end or something might be underlined, and it's just not consistent. So this, it's really a utility tool which allows you to build this content up in a standardized manner. Yeah.
It does, yeah.
And it's formatting.
I find when I've created lists on sites in the past, so I've done probably exactly what you do. I take three columns and I put an image in each column and then I put a list underneath. And I find that it's difficult sometimes to get the image, the title, and the list of links to line up nicely. And I play around a lot, and it takes a lot of fidgeting. I play around with the size of the images. With these blocks, it doesn't matter. You can just put your image in, you fill out the field, and it creates a nicely formatted block, and you don't have to fidget anymore with your layout, which is easier. Okay, thanks.
Yes.
About the blocks for landing pages.
So would it be your recommendation to keep those in addition to the left menu? Or, because that needs to be like double the page.
Right.
Mm. Or would it be a recommendation to have them just on the page and then once you click on one of those, then that it'll last over here? Which, again, creates now a different
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the examples, you'll see some of the pages, the initial before pages, had left menus. And then I got rid of them when I did the full page layout. You don't have to do that. I think you would have to identify what the requirements are of your viewing staff or your viewing your visitors. But I think for most people, that they would be able to, they don't always need to navigate from your landing page to one page and then back to your landing page to another page. So I didn't myself see the need to have the left menu exposed continually. You could do that, but I think that the impact of the blocks is nicest at the full width. So I think you need to identify how critical that information is in the left-hand page and if it's likely that people are going to need to go back and forth to it. Because if they are going to need to do that, you might need to leave that navigation exposed.
And just a quick comment on the Twitter feed. Thank you for updating that. would that block be updating automatically once it's released?
The Twitter...
Would the feeds update? Yeah. Yes, it is available. You have to have your site authenticated to allow Twitter feeds to appear. So you just create a service request to authorize the Twitter block, and then you can add as many tweets or Twitter blocks as you like.
Oh, the Twitter block is available.
Yes, yeah, it is. Any other questions?
Hi, I think of the blocks in the room page.
Right. Yeah. So this is a technical issue that is something that that our So the question is that on mobile, if you go to Newsroom, that page takes a long time to load, right? Because you have these large images. So this is an improvement that we would make where it would, depending on the device, it would load a smaller image. But we did want to release this function. I mean, there's a growing need for tools like this. So we're doing things iteratively, like step by step. And so this improvement will happen, and you won't have to worry about changing your images, or it will just happen automatically. We need that again.
There's a question over here. So the question, if I understand correctly, is what are the pitfalls to using images where you've got text in that image? That's correct? Yeah. It's something we touched on a little bit in the presentation. So in a university environment, we have to be very careful about making content accessible to everyone. And everyone includes making that content accessible to people who might have visual impairments. And people who have visual impairments use screen reading tools that read the websites out to them. And when you have an image with text in it, there's nothing for that screen reader to read. So when the person listening to that page gets to that image, all they hear is image. They don't know that there's any content associated with that image. They don't know that there's text in that image. They just know that it's an image. So that's the main pitfall to it. But one of the issues that I have found as a site manager that creates content in Photoshop is when I go to update that file or that image, I have to find that Photoshop file that I originally used to create that image. And sometimes I created that image years ago. Then I have to go in and update the title. Sometimes I have to pass that page on to somebody else. If they have to update that image, they need that Photoshop file. So it's a little bit difficult to update. If you're using content that is an image with text in it, you need to have that original file, and that really kind of complicates maintaining the content moving forward.
Did that answer your question? Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll take a stab. So one of the benefits of using the statement block, which you have the text overlaid on top, is that we've already done the testing for contrast to make sure that the text that you put on, because it has the black overlay, that your content will be clear. This closer? Right.
Okay.
Yeah, we hear you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other advantages of the block is that the text gets resized on smaller screens. So it just doesn't get diminished like other images. It actually resizes intelligently for the size of the screen that it's on. You don't have to do any of the guesswork. So we think that's going to be a real boon for people using smaller devices. Any other questions? I think you can contact the service desk. Do we have any trainers here today? I saw Matthew.
Yeah. Oh, Matthew's here. Yes, Matthew's right there.
Matthew, can you answer that question? Where are the training labs?
We're in
688 Sherbrooke.
And you do have to register. So actually, it's a good time to just revisit some of the links that we have up here. Deborah?
I think the
lady's question might be answered by saying it's mcgill.ca/IT/training.
That's true.
That's excellent. We're going to get you on the service desk. Yeah.
And there was another question. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Since
you said that these would be available early summer, will all of the website managers be getting an announcement of when they're available?
You will be getting an announcement about when they're available as soon as they're ready. So we'll be pushing out announcements through the IT communications channels, but also through some other channels as well.
Or if you see us dancing like in front of campus, then you'll also know that they're ready.
Oh, there's another question up at the top there.
Yeah. Sorry, take it over.
There's,
this presentation will be available. If you go to the very first link, we want you to fill out the survey form. And we're going to be sending out some reminders because it's really helpful for us to know what kind of information you're looking for and if you benefited from the information you received today. And if you go and fill out the survey form, you're going to see that we're asking questions specifically for each of the features that we've shown today. So we can get some valuable feedback on that. But what's more is that on the same page that you visit for the survey on our WMS website, you're going to find a link to a video of this presentation. Now, it won't be available for 24 hours, we've been told, but you will be able to get to it. And you can also encourage any of your colleagues who haven't seen it, who might be interested, to view it. It'll be up for quite a while.
And there's one more question up here. Of images? Did you want to answer that, Val?
We do have a central image bank, but it's not a public image bank, so it's almost, you know, you need permissions to be able to access it. What I'd say is if you contact us because you have a specific problem or a specific page that you're building and you need, you know, image resources, we can go through the image bank for you and try and pull out things that meet your theme. But if you need permanent access to the image bank, then that's a request that, you know, we can direct you to the right person to make.
And but Val's with the webcoms team.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, separate from us.
Well, there's a shared drive, but from my experience, not everybody has access to that. It's the image portfolio for the school. So oftentimes there's a lot of categories in there, but nothing is tagged. So it requires, you can search through the image bank, but you're not going to find necessarily everything in the image bank that relates to campus. You know, you're going to have to actually go through all the folders. And
I think it does raise a really good point, though, that a lot of this is image-based stuff that nice enough, lots of
We definitely get that.
Okay, and I think we'll take a couple more questions.
Yeah. You have an idea about your image base. You allow web managers to send you any images that they use, because you never know when an image can be used for something else. Because a lot of the stuff that's there is very nice photography, but we've seen it for 20 years, and we've got something new. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another question in the back. I'll take a stab at this one. I think that would be a great idea. I think McGill needs a broader set of maybe, how could I put this, at least community open images. And I don't think that exists right now. Like, there are repositories, communications handles, but time and time again people ask for, well, do we have a set of icons? That would be a great idea. That would be just wonderful, because then we'd have consistency across all the websites. It's one of the reasons why we're encouraging people to use the same social media follow tools, because they're going to look alike, and people are going to recognize them, and they spot them instantly and know what to do, what to click on it. If you're just winging it, sometimes your users might not even recognize what it's about. Yeah, set of icons, that would be fantastic.
For like 10, 12 inches. can go through the image bank for you and try and send you a couple things that might work for, let's say, your home page.
Hey, another question. Does that answer your question? Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Oh, sorry. Thanks everyone. I'm glad you were here. I'm glad you were here.
Still.
1, 2.